This is Akafe. Laura Marie and Jessica Marie proudly present A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, a podcast. Fair warning, everything the hosts say is explicit, full of spoilers and adult content, and shall not be used against them. They have opinions. Let's try not to drag anyone for expressing themselves and just have fun for an hour. We all deserve it.
This episode does not contain any spoilers outside of my so-called life, but does mention The Mortal Instruments, The Little Mermaid, and Euphoria. For full list, please see show notes.
Everybody, and welcome to A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, your weekly deep dive into the fantasy literature and fandoms that we love. I'm Laura Marie.
And I'm Jessica Marie.
And today we are discussing the cult classic 90s TV show, My So-Called Life. We are specifically talking about the first two episodes. And I have a history with this show, surprising probably nobody. And Jess, you do not. I am more interested into what you think, into what you have to say. Who cares about me? Please tell me. Please tell me.
You've been on this show, I want to say, since it came out, but not really, because we were babies. But for as long as you've known this show, you've been on to this show. And for as long as I've known you, you've been about this show. It was only recently when we did our little girls trip weekend that you were like, guess what we're doing? We're watching the show. And we watched the pilot. I could not believe. I think I just like, I laughed with you. It was so great. And at the end of it, I was just, my mouth was open thinking like, that's just the pilot. That's just the pilot. That is one of the strongest pilots I have ever seen in my history of, you know, of my consumption of media and working in entertainment. That was an incredible, like, how are you not captivated? And yes, I understand, like, that's what the pilot is supposed to be. But there are so many themes and so many topics that are hit on right out the gate. You feel like, oh my gosh, this is only the beginning of what the show is going to be.
He's already cheating? Oh my God.
And I know we're talking about the first and second episodes, but I'm just going to jump the gun right here. And I know, like, this is the 90s. The show came out in 94. So, like, if you have to think about, like, backtracking between, like, writing scripts and production and the technology wasn't there and the casting, this show was probably, like, started actually taping in 92, 93 to be greenlit for a 19 episode first and only season for 94. And yes, the technology wasn't there. Obviously, we'll get into it with certain storylines, but there's one with the cheating and he calls the mistress from the house phone. And all I'm thinking is, oh my God, your phone bills. Cause everything, you didn't have technology, so you couldn't like Photoshop that out of there. So when you got your fucking statement in the mail, that number that I'm not familiar with, that number, and she was onto him too. The wife was like, go see your brother or whatever it is you're doing. She fucking was into it. I don't know. She had some sort of inkling. I know. I'm like two episodes in and I'm ready.
Well, and I think that I love that your opinion is that this pilot is one of the strongest pilots you've ever seen. I have watched this pilot a thousand times. How could you not? It's so good. And you also end up watching the pilot every single time you watch a new episode because everything from the intro is taken from the pilot.
Are you saying it follows the pattern?
I guess. It just might. But yeah, the intro, the like, go now, go, bah, and the intro of every episode are scenes taken from the pilot. So you see the pilot over and over and over again. Isn't that just like so fun? So it is shocking, Jess, as you have alluded to, how much is covered in this pilot. It is, you get very seamlessly friendship transitions, high school, family dynamics, parental dynamics, independent of you. And then the one-liners that Angela throws out is just like, it's just like teenage poetry, right? Like it's good, it's bad, but it's good. you know, you're just like,
and you're, yeah. you're like, you're cringing in these situations. Cause some of the situations, I know we were watching the pilot and I was just like, no, that couldn't be me. I would like, you know, immediately thinking of the house party, first house party she's at, her crush is at, falls in the mud, and she stays.
She stays. Oh my God. Braver than I.
And you want to know something? I feel like you could have worked around this maybe by getting like quote unquote thrown in the pool, you know, something to soften the blow of landing in the mud in front of your crush. And he's high as a kite because he doesn't even know what day it is. It doesn't feel like a Friday because it isn't.
Well, Jess, you bring up the crush. We haven't said names yet. Can you give me like who some of these main characters are in these two episodes?
Yeah, we have Angela, who's played by the one and only Claire Danes.
The one and only
Claire Danes. Yes. We have her childhood friend, Sharon, and we have her new, I don't want to say best friend, but the new friend that she's been hanging out with, who is Rayanne and Ricky. Then you have her, like, neighborhood friend, Brian?
Brian.
And we have her crush, Jordan Catalano, again, played by the one and only Jared Leto.
The infamous, one might say. Jared Leto. Jess, you said this to me before we started recording. Did I have a chance in hell? I mean,
this feels like Drive Me Crazy all over again, because that man came on the screen and I was like, oh, if I think he's like cute with these baby blues and just walking, being him, I was like, there is no way Laura had like even a second. There was zero chance from the beginning. So there are moments where Angela sees him in the hall and gets giddy, or sees him in the back of a cop car, and she's just shit-eating grin, smiling that he knew her name. Not only did he see her, but knew her name. And you're split because you want to be mortified, like your crush just saw you in the back of a cop car. But also, she's in this transitional point of her life thinking like, he sees me, he recognizes me. Is he also going to think I'm a little bit of a badass because I'm in the back of a cop car? It's all over the place. Feelings are big and they're still super relatable today.
And Angela is 15. And they're all 15 except for Jordan, who's been held back twice. So, but he's, you know, he's there. Okay. Obviously, I love this show, Jess. I think you are very passionate after two episodes.
What the hell? But that's good TV.
They don't make them like they used to. They really don't. There is more covered in this pilot than is covered in like seasons of like episodes of filler and like other stuff. Like it's just so good. You have, I think, Angela's inner monologue is one of the most relatable things that I saw on TV as a child, because I saw this. I'm not going to say like I saw this when I was young. I was impressionable. So it was wonderful to see this, like the dinner in the pilot where Angela's just like, I can't make myself eat a well-balanced meal in front of my mom. It means too much to her. Lately, like, I can't just, like, look at her without just wanting to stab her repeatedly. It was the first time where my feelings were on screen. And I know it's like, oh, my God, like, this white girl is being seen. But, like, as a child who had, like, mommy issues, seeing another teen have mommy issues with the same kind of, like, there's just nothing here. Like, I can't, but, like, also later in the episode when Angela cries in her mom's arms, it's, like, this very difficult transitional time. And, Jess, you and I were talking earlier. You say you don't make them like they used to. It is kind of hard to classify this show, really, because the parents get a lot of screen time, but also the kids get the screen time, too. but it's also a drama. Like, it's not funny so much.
I wouldn't even consider it a dramedy. No.
Mm-mm. No, we're not laughing so much, really. It's and especially, you know, no spoilers, but like later on in the series, it gets a little bit more serious. And I think that, one, it's one season and it's a difficult show to find an audience for, to find a placement for, to find a time slot for. And two, it doesn't have I'm going to say gimmick. It doesn't have like a sensationalized like thing to kind of like pull you in. These are just like suburban white people living their life. And that friendship that blossoms and that is shown here is shown doing everyday, regular, mundane things, which is something that we talked about in our female friendships episode. And I think that the friendship transition here that happens in these first two episodes between Angela, Sharon, and Rayanne, because Ricky kind of is like a package deal with Rayanne,
who also dipped at the first sign of trouble. Like, he was just like, hey, I gotta peace out. Cops just showed up, which I also get. But to the other extent, I'm like, your friends were just being like, trigger warning, sexually harassed, sexually assaulted. And your first concern was like, I gotta go. Meanwhile, Claire Danes, Angela jumps right into it saying, get the fuck off of my friend.
Well, that is just the perfect, you're just so perfect. You're just so great. Okay. Okay. So, after that scene, right? Let's back up a little bit.
There's just a lot happening. Yeah, sorry. We want to cover it all.
Yeah, we want to cover it all, but not really, because, you know, watch this show. It's on Hulu. And
is it? I watched it on Prime.
Yep, Hulu. And here's the thing. Okay, so Angela and Sharon have a friendship breakup. They have a friendship breakup in the bathroom and they both cry. And it is hard to watch that and not feel emotional about it because, well, this is just me, I think, me, I statements. I've had a lot of friendship breakups where I haven't gotten that closure. Yeah. And I do think like everyone in a friendship breakup does want to know why. And you know, Jess, you have said that I'm good with like confrontation. I'm good with like, you know, kind of asking the questions. Maybe it's because I was influenced so fucking young with Sharon being like, what did I do?
She wanted an answer. She and even Angela was saying like, I can't pinpoint where it happened, when it happened. I wish I had an answer for you. It's not one thing. It's a million little things. And, you know, Sharon in that point was like, well, if I was such a terrible fucking person, why didn't you tell me? If we were supposed to be like these, like, why didn't you call me out on it? Like, I don't want to ruin our friendship. But also, fuck you. You look like shit because I know you're upset about that. And that's like something you're focusing on right now. You're changing everything that who you are, while at the same time Angela's having like this internal existential crisis of like, what is life? Who are we? Are we really who we are, or are we just mere projections of who we think we're supposed to be and are expected to be? Which is also like deep.
Well, and that's the yearbook, you know, that's the whole yearbook conversation that Angela has with the yearbook teacher. When she quits yearbook, she's like, we're so focused on like what's going on behind us, but what's happening right now and the future. And we all like agreed to have personalities, but like, why? Angela's one-liners are cringy good. School is a battlefield for your heart. Preach it, Angela. Preach it, Angela. Oh my God. Like, it's just so good. You are so beautiful. It hurts to look at you. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Okay. I love this. Obviously, I love this. I love the mirrored thoughts between mother and daughter without either of them knowing it. Because this whole concept of like, it hurts to look at you comes from Jordan putting eye drops in his eyes all the time. He's closing his eyes and he's like, oh my God. He's, you know, and Angela romanticizing that and being like, yeah, I would love someone to say like, you know, you are so beautiful. It hurts to look at you. Meanwhile, Angela's mother, who is also having like a crisis of faith in her own like way, is saying to her husband, Cheater Graham, that Angela growing up and going through this transitional stage is so different. She looks like a stranger. It hurts to look at her. And so it's like, right? Like, it's, ooh, we love it. They don't make them like they used to.
I feel like we're so old just saying that. But they don't. And, oh, it's bittersweet watching those mirrored moments between Angela and Patty, her mom. Not even necessarily between them, but it's also like the self-awareness that's there, because she even says to her dad, she's like, I know she likes you more. She prefers you more. And then you have, Angela in her internal dialogue. She goes, I love when my dad like does this thing and he always listens to me and he reheats food better than anybody reheats food. So you know that relationship that is there too.
And then Angela sees him with another woman at the end of this episode and then hears him speaking to another woman at the end of the second episode. And she has to like live with that.
And what was something that you told me when we first watched the pilot? You go, and Brian, her neighborhood friend, was there when she first sees it. And it's not something that she can hide from. It's not something that she can be in denial of. It's not something that she can kind of gaslight herself into thinking it isn't what she saw. She knows exactly what it is, because even if she was thinking, because she never saw them kiss, she never saw them be physical, but she knew that her dad lied because he said he was going to his brother's. That whole situation I thought was weird, just for the mom to be like, you already saw your brother once this week. Like, oh, okay, so he saw now he wants to see his brother twice. That was my whole thing. But there was no running from it when Brian was there with her. And then even if she had compartmentalized it, forgot about it, pushed it away, here he is in his phone line kitchen, tethered to the wall, talking to the person. It's re-solidifying, oh, that is exactly what I thought I thought I saw. It wasn't just a friend, because here he is telling her on the phone line, I can't do this. I can't keep having this emotional connection with you, because that's what it was. It was an emotional affair, thus far. I'm only on two episodes in.
Yep. And in episode two, Neil even says, like, you're such a cliche. Like, don't do it. Like, you haven't done anything that bad yet. And you're acting fucking weird. You went ballroom dancing. You're acting fucking weird. What are you doing? It's good. Like, it's good. Good. Good shit. Good shit. And also, too, I just finished The Mortal Instruments, all six. So this is very like Isabel coded with the parents, like very Isabel coded, just kind of reversed. So interesting. But also too, like the dad has his own agenda in a way, because like Patty's like, you know, as you said, like, you know that she loves you more. It's like, why do you have to make me be the mean one? Meanwhile, he wants to like GTF out of the house too. Like he, you know, he's got his own thing going on. So he's like,
well, and then at the same time, you have, Angela telling him, you know, telling her dad, you know, her dad's like, come on, like be nicer to your mom. Give her more credit. You're being a little too hard on her. She just wants you, you know, she just wants you to be happy. She just wants everybody to be happy, like keep the peace. And she goes, no, dad, that's you.
Mm-hmm. And there's silence.
He's dad, like, because he was like, oh shit, she read me.
Yeah, she read me. Too filth. Too filth. Okay, here's the thing. I love him. I love Graham in these first two episodes as he is a father to Angela.
I feel like not, I was like, oh no, I just got foreshadowed.
No, as a father to Angela and Danielle, the sister, not as a husband to Patty, right?
That like, man is so, like, as a man, as a husband, he is so emasculated. He cannot believe that his wife is more successful than him, is running shit, is working late, and he's like, my wife is better than me. Now I got to stay at home, or I have to pursue. No, because he works also. I have to pursue other endeavors.
They work together at her. They work at her father's business.
Yo, my God. Like, he hates it. He fucking hates it. And that's probably why he went and have his affair. He's like, I don't know. We just got to talking and one thing led to another. No, because she makes you feel like you are in this position of power because you're not feeling that at home.
Preach it. Preach it. My hands are up. Preach it. You read him. You read him. You read him. But again, going back to him as a father, I like how he kind of like he like sticks up for Angela a little bit with his mom when Patty's going off about Ricky being like,
that was so funny.
He's like, well, really? Not like- what? I'm not on anybody's side. Grow up and pick a side.
And he's like, she's like, he wears eyeliner. He wears eyeliner? She's like, I don't know. Like, she's like, stop repeating everything I said. And you know who I also feel really bad? Like, through all of these back and forth confrontations, you know, arguments between the parents, between Angela, there's also a little sister involved. And you can just hear her like, hey, look at me. Let me watch my handstand. Can I watch this movie? Can I go out? Can I see my friends? Can my friends come over? That poor child as a little sister is not, hey, I have Anne Frank too. Maybe we can read it together. She's definitely in therapy.
Yeah, Danielle. Oh my gosh. It's very, very exciting. Very exciting. Okay. You brought up Brian. I love Brian. Like, I love Brian, the neighborhood friend up in the tree on rollerblades. Like, but Brian, I mean, obviously he's in love with Angela. From the first two episodes, we can tell.
Obviously. You mean...
Obviously. So,
you know, you mean the boy with the camera zooming in on the girl that he has a crush on and taking pictures of her with her new hair leaving the room? Doesn't have a crush on her? Okay.
In the light, waiting for her in the tree. But the thing that I love about Brian, especially in the first episode, because we'll get to the second one in detail in a bit. But in the first episode, when Angela is changing outside, he's like, you're breaking like 1,000 different laws. Like, what are you doing? And he gets like progressively more like, you're not stupid. Don't act stupid. And Angela's like, everything's an act. Like, you know, cringy one-liners that we love.
But not wrong.
But not wrong. But Brian is out there waiting for her when she comes up later in the cop car, and he is trying to ask her what happens, and he has this like catch and like break in his voice. He's like, Angela, like, Chase, like, what happened? Like, are you okay? Like, what happened?
As much as he's in love with her, I will say, like, when he's waiting for her, it's definitely not in a creepy way. Like, he's no. like worried for her safety.
Yeah, exactly. And he sees her in the cop car and he's just like, oh my God, like, oh my God. Like, and then it goes to episode 2 with Brian. But I really want to touch on Rayanne here.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten into the Rayanne of it all.
Okay, so especially in episode 2, but we can see glimpses of what is going to go sideways with Rayanne in episode 1. Because when Angela steps in, when the boys, they're men, when the men are getting handsy with them and Angela steps in, you know, there's pushing and everything and yelling, Rayanne gets angry. And she pushes Angela and she says, no, I take care of myself. Like, I take care of myself. And she throws the bottle.
She's mad at Rayanne is mad at Angela, not at the people who assaulted her.
Yes. Yes. Because it's like this, you know, it's this complicated feeling that Rayanne is having.
And I feel also that that's also a hint into her personal home life where it's like, I can take care of myself. So you're already like, that's just like the surface level of you're not being taken care of in other ways that you are able to stay out late and nobody knows. Like, because clearly Rayanne does have more freedom than Angela does.
Yeah. And Rayanne's mom wasn't home. Nope. You know, and Angela made the point, like, of course her mom is home. She's not just like some, she doesn't just let her like run wild. Like, of course, of course, of course. And then to have that stark reality hit you in the face, like, oh no, she wasn't home. Huh.
I thought we knew that though, because that was like the whole gimmick that Angela had to tell her parents, Angela's mom is, or Rayanne's mom is home. They knew that she, because Rayanne was like, oh, it's not an issue. My mom's not going to be home. We'll totally get, you know, here's the logistics, which I know is something you love. Like having, especially, but again, like the technology wasn't there. There was a place, there was a time. These are like the logistics that are involved. Here's how you're going to get from point A to point B and everything that it encompasses.
Mm-hmm. Tito's going to pick you up. We're going to do like a rolling pickup on the street, like hop in the car. Like we love it. We love it. We love it. Now, Ricky says to Angela after Rayanne has her angry outburst, like, don't worry, she will not remember any of this. She blacks out when she drinks. Now, here's my point. In the cop car, this is what makes friendship like this so incredibly difficult. In the cop car, Rayanne is blackout. She is absolutely blackout. And she's with Angela and she's like, I will always be there for you, Angela. I will never leave you. I will always stick up for you. Like, you know, and then she drops this line that makes you, that really hurts, because you know she was listening. You know that she like remembers, that she cares, that she's like making this effort, but like there's something, right? Because she says to her, you know, Angela, with hair like that, it hurts to look at you. So it's like, damn. Like she is a good, like, you know, like, damn, that is like a friendship moment, right? Because it's like, oh, and then at school later,
we had a time.
Hey, girlfriend. Oh, my God. You had to be there. We had a time, didn't we? We had a time. And it's just like this.
It's so interesting, too, because it's like in those moments, you know, Angela was like, girl, did we? You were there. But it also ties into, and again, like this is all after we had our female friendships episode where we talk about friendships not being linear. And sometimes there are some red flags in friendships that we're not necessarily picking up because we want a closeness. We want a sisterhood. We want somebody that feels like, oh my gosh, they see this part of me, not from like, you know, in a way, Sharon has compartmentalized her as this childhood, young, specific type of friend. And here's this whole new, different friend person that sees a different dynamic of me. And you can yes. see that, like, you see her wheels, Angela's wheels turning, and she's constantly at a crossroads because it's like, we're still learning to navigate how to grow parallel in friendships or maybe growing apart or maybe together. There's so many different variations of it.
And also, like Angela says in the pilot, like she just had to do something. Like her life, was just like, she had to do something. And if when Rayanne said that her hair was holding her back, she wasn't just talking about her hair. She was talking about her life. So it's that feeling of possibility and change in your teenage years, that is something that is just, you can't replicate that, those feelings.
At the same time, like, there is a level of privilege that I think we have to acknowledge that, that Angela has, that she felt safe enough to make that choice without consulting her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine coming home? Straight different dye job to your house?
Absolutely not. My mom would have killed me. She would have killed me.
I couldn't even get highlights, and I like snuck sunning in my hair through a hairspray bottle to like change the thing because I wanted to have a different hair color so bad. And I was like, oh, it's natural. No, it was not. I was sunning with like anything to try to be different. And then it got really brassy. So don't do that.
I like that you bring up Angela's privilege, because she is absolutely the epitome of white girl privilege here. She's got a gorgeous house, two working parents, a sister, a yard, like she's got it all here. And later episodes show us more of Rayanne's home life and more of Ricky's home life. Especially Ricky has a lot of fleshed out episodes, and you see that Angela's privilege is there to show the like stark comparison and the like, it's not just like this. Like other people have other lives, and when you see them at school, you are seeing an act, right? Because because as Angela says, it's all an act, Brian. Everything's an act.
I was going to say that circles back to our pilot episode, because even when you jump forward to episode 2, Angela only knows a certain type of, you know, I say privilege, but a certain type of dynamic with people around her, because we find out that not only is Sharon her childhood friend and they've been friends for 15 years, their mothers also haven't been childhood friends. They went to high school together. They continued to be friends together. And they're just like, you know, Sharon's mother comes over. Do you know why they had a fallout? And she's like, I don't know. I just know that I don't know the details, but I know that they were arguing in the bathroom. And then there were tears exchanged. And Patty, Angela's mother, is like, well, you got more out. You already know more information than I do. Meanwhile, Sharon's just pouting outside, like, meh, meh, meh.
Talking to Brian. I love it. I love it. This episode follows the pattern. We have Angela talking about her kissing memories. She has three. All three are pretty shit. And she talks about how she is unaware of her mind and body when Jordan is around. And like, how real is that? Like, you just kind of like short circuit. She's like, really? Oh my God. Oh my God. Really? And Rayanne is like, okay. All right.
Be chill. A normal person. And she's like, I don't know how to compute it. Like, I acknowledge that he's there. And even when I just know. And I can't take my focus, even if I'm not looking at him. And you know, those are big, big feelings that happens when you're in a crush and you're trying to be nonchalant and you're trying to be blasé with your friends, having a whole different conversation to look like, look, this person doesn't affect me. When deep down, you're like, this is my crush of all time. While at the same time, later in this episode, when there is a moment where she could be interacting with Jordan again, she's like, I don't want to burst the bubble. I don't want to burst the bubble. It's a fantasy. It's my obsession. It's the thing that keeps me going right now during high school. Do not take that away from me.
And of course, we start by cutting hearts open. I mean, it's just so poetic.
It's so poetic.
Like, again, they don't make them like this. They don't. They just don't. Because we're cutting hearts open with Brian in science class. And this is when we have Angela just like dipping. We couldn't do this in my high school. I don't know how they did it here. Like, they were on top of attendance where I went, but okay. But Angela dips, leaves class, and gets like a full bathroom recap from Rayanne and Ricky, who wasn't even there. He wasn't even there.
But you know what? Respect for Ricky, because Ricky's that friend. He's like, and this happened. She's like, you weren't even there. And he's like, but I've heard this so many times that I'm going to start recounting the story. And I'm that person. I'll be like, let me tell you as if I were there, because now I have implanted, like, I think of like how many years we've been friends. And we, like, I know stuff from your high school. And I'm like, oh, is it that time? As if we went to the same high school.
And you talk about friendship. This is, again, another example of this complicated friendship with Rayanne. I say complicated because I'm teasing what happens in the rest of the 17 episodes that happen. But Rayanne notices that Angela has a thing for Jordan, first of all, and says, like, Ricky, we have to help her, right? And then sees an opportunity to say, like, hey, I could – Jordan, hey, could you get my girlfriend Angela a fake ID? Like, she needs it. And he's like, why doesn't she just ask Tito? Creates a little flourish, a little interest, right? It's my girlfriend. It's my girl. She's French. Long story, right?
The French thing, I was like, this just, like, goes back to our lie better. I was like, out of all the things, you know they're going to cross paths at some point. So she's French. She's like, he's like, really? And she gets confused with certain words, and she just didn't know how to ask this. Like, the way it's concocted is kind of obscene.
That, though, is important later. Very important.
Later in the series later. Or later in this episode?
Later in the series.
Oh.
This idea that Angela kind of mixes up words and maybe isn't so great at English is used later. So, everything for a reason. Everything for a reason.
Interesting.
I know. I know. We're all teasing here. I love, though, Rayanne sees the opportunity to set up her friends. Is like, yes, Brian comes later and is like, yo, Chase, like, you're hooked in this extra credit project with me. Come over and fucking work on it. Like, what the hell? And Rayanne is like, opportunity. Yeah, like, my parents won't be there. Come over and work on the project. Opportunity. And yeah, she's like, yeah, don't worry, Brian. Angela will be there. Bells and whistles. Don't worry. Don't worry. Seize the opportunity and takes it. And as a friend, is that a good friend?
I feel like in the moment, you're like, that's my girl. She has my back. I don't know it yet. But the fact that she's like going out of her way for me would make me think this is a real friend.
Me too. Me too. She didn't have to do any of that. She didn't have to work this. Like, she is trying. Like,
it feels selfless.
Yeah, it does. It does. And who doesn't want to be the object of, like, selfless love like that, right? Especially at 15. Yeah.
And she hasn't had a lot of exposure to, like, love and what, like, selflessness looks like outside of Sharon. And even then, like, that friendship has kind of deteriorated. So this is, like, another thing. And then we already have, like, the recounting of her, like, terrible kissing stories. So it's like, and that person talked to me and kissed me because it was a bet. And right now, this doesn't feel like a bet. This feels just, like, completely altruistic.
Ah, it's good. It's good shit. It's good shit. Angela, cringy one-liners. How is that fair? How can he have just, like, things to do and other things on his mind? I have nothing else on my mind. Girlhood.
Good. Yeah, I was going to say. I was like, Angela is one for the people.
Yeah. I mean, truer words, right? How am I obsessing over every little thing and he gets to have other things on his mind? How is that fair? Preach it.
That's what, like, crushes feel like, all consuming.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. Oh, it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. Meanwhile,
I missed that. It's been a while since we heard that.
Patty and her friend, Sharon's mom, are talking about, like, spicing up their marriage and how things are getting stagnant and how, like, men like long hair and women to wear red. And it's just this, like, very real conversation between older married women that I didn't pay attention to, obviously, when I was a child, but that I'm paying attention to now as an adult. I'm like, damn, this is like, yeah, yeah, no, go off. Go off. She's like, because she's like, how am I supposed to spice up my marriage? Like, lay down rose petals. Sure. Let me make dinner and, like, empty the kitty litter and take out the trash first. Like, all of these things. It's just like friendship in normality.
And at different stages in your life, too. And exactly. Even, like, you have, like, it's so interesting. And, like, the real conversations, too, because I think even earlier in the episode, Patty is saying to her husband, she's like, aren't you going to give me a kiss before you go to work? And he's like, I'm going to see you. And she's like, no, we keep it professional at work, which I 100% I'm with. But then he goes, oh, but we're not going to have sex. It's just like a kiss in the morning. And then she's also, again, having another real conversation of, like, it doesn't have to, like, intimacy doesn't necessarily mean, like, sexual acts. Like, there can be like intimacy in the kiss too. And you can tell that he's angry because the way he kisses her, she's like, you know, her breath is taken away, but then he just like storms off. And again, it's just like different aspects of the relationship. Watching this at the ages we are now is really interesting because you're seeing the duality of what's happening. We have our past, or at least me, because you watch this like when you were younger, like you watch this past version of like, oh my gosh, that's what high school and that's like what this one point of my life really was like. And then you have like what they where like the adults are now, and you're like, that's also very, very real. And having those conversations that I don't know, it's really interesting to watch this now. I feel like, wow, this is like that King Triton, you know, when you're watching The Little Mermaid and you're like, shit, she is 16. She is just a child.
You are just a child. Daddy, I love it. Shut up. All right. This, you are so good at just getting to the heart of the point before I can even vocalize it.
Okay. I don't know where we're going now.
This dinner with the introduction of Neil, this family dinner with Neil, and Patty brings up ballroom dancing, and Angela's like, it sounds fake. And Neil's like, I was just going to say that. It sounds fake. And they're laughing and bonding over and at the mother. I mean, do I have to recite the father-daughter quote? Father and daughter will mock the mother, but it doesn't save the daughter from having the same fate as the mother. That could not be more clear here. And I was shocked, speechless. Especially because Angela says that, like, she used to be really close with her dad. Her breasts have come between them.
I also think is, like, I don't know. I think that's a weird, like, that's why the mother's
No, that's not a weird thing. It is not a weird thing. When I grew up and started, you know, wearing the training bras, doing my hair a little bit, my dad took steps back. It was just like, well, there goes, and here's the other part of it. There goes my little girl, right?
That angle of it.
That is the angle of it. Wear a bigger towel. I can't tell. Like, I can't tell her. If I could tell her, I would. But it's weird and it's awkward. And like, she's my little girl. And I can't say that I see you. That
you're becoming like a woman and not my little girl.
How can I say that to you? You're 15. You're my baby. Like, how can I say?
Okay.
It's not weird. It's not at all. And it is something, again, you do not see on TV ever kind of portrayed this way. Here's just another example just to like say, how does dad say, I think you should start wearing a bra? Dad can't say that. Dad would notice.
Oh my God.
Dad would notice.
I just had like a flashback. The first time I went to SeaWorld, my mom was like insisting, like, Jessica needs to start wearing training bras. And my dad was like, no, no, no. And then we went to SeaWorld and we were in the splash zone. And then like that, I think I was so self-conscious of, and I was in a white shirt because why wouldn't I be? It's Florida. And I was I was older than 10. Maybe I was 10. And I just remember that was the moment that I think he had that, oh, Jessica does need training bras.
Right.
Oh my God.
But who told you?
My mom was trying to tell my dad, and my dad was in denial about getting me any.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just like,
oh. Huh.
And it's not in like a weird way. It's like,
no.
Oh my God.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God. It's one of those. See?
Okay.
It's totally different. And so that struggle of redefining, and that's the other thing, it's like redefining your relationship with your parents, which is what Angela is going through with both her dad and her mom. And both her dad and her mom are redefining their own relationship with each other. So it's just all of this change and all of this turmoil, which is just like represented by hair, obviously.
Each of them are going through their own hair. I mean, and even Patty, Angela's mom, she's like saying, like, I'm thinking about changing my hair. What if I do something shorter? And Angela kind of Mom, just because I changed my hair doesn't mean you have to change your hair too.
Mm-hmm.
And hair is very symbolic.
Yes, it is. Hair is very symbolic. Jess, you and I were talking about a book that I had read when I, again, was a child. And this character is talking about how French women have a word for when they cut their hair in a big dramatic thing. They usually use like big red scissors. It's like there's a word for it. But yeah, the transformative power of hair and the taking control and ownership by color and cut is very important. And again, everybody is on their own separate journey here, but their journeys are just decades apart, I think.
Yeah, they're very parallel. And what mm-hmm. the journeys are parallel, and what they're encountering apart in those journeys is very different, but how they're handling it is very similar.
Exactly. And then we have Neil after this dinner being like, oh my God, like you and Patty are like the happiest couple that I know. And Graham's like, whoa, whoa, we have problems. Whoa, whoa. And Neil's like, sure. Sure you do. Bye. Bye. And that's when.
But he was also like, fix it. He kind of calls him out. Like, first it was like kind of selfish. He's like, y'all can't fuck it up. What am I going to do? Like, you're my new parents. Like, what do I do for the holidays? Where am I going to sleep? Who's going to feed me? I'm the little brother. But then when it got deeper, his little brother was definitely like, fix this shit. Don't fuck it up.
Mm-hmm. Don't fuck it up. And he angrily...
He's going to fuck it up, isn't he? He's going to fuck it up.
Oh, yeah. Real hard. And then Graham comes in. He's angrily like, yes to dancing. I said I want to do it. Which, red flag. But she's just excited, right?
She did say, she was like,
really?
Only if you want to. I'm not making you do that. And he's like, I said I'll do it, so I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just to close out that storyline, they are terrible dancers. The dance teacher says that they should dance with other people.
Tell me that wasn't symbolic. And he's like, I've been wanting to dance with other dancers. And she's like, you want to dance with other dancers? I don't want to dance with anybody else. And I'm like, he's been dancing with somebody else.
Already. Mm. Getting sent out to the car of a boy is... I just like a canon event, right? It's just a canon event.
To a boy. It is the car to the boy you think is cute, that you think is kind of, you're kind of crushing on a little bit.
And you're in a place that you're like kind of supposed to be at, but like not really. Like your friends are, it's like
it's
not.
It's all there. It's all there. It really is. I want to know who was in the writer's room. This is a canon event.
It is. It's just so good. So what is going on? Angela is over at Brian Krakow's house to presumably work on the experiment, but she invited over Rayanne and Ricky so that Jordan could give Angela her fake ID. So Rayanne and Ricky show up. They go inside, send Angela out. This is what you were talking about, Jess, where it's like, and Ricky is so funny. He's like, an obsession. It's an obsession. You're talking about an obsession. And Angela's like, it keeps me going. Like, I don't have anything if I don't have this. Like, sometimes I would rather have the fantasy. What if, you know, this is like the what ifs. And Ricky's like, I totally understand this. I love Ricky. Preach. Don't you love how he leans? Jordan's car. Jess, you and I, and I guess all of us, this podcast, have talked about maybe a third place.
Oh, cars are a third place.
There was a time, I think it's less so now because there's just cameras everywhere and like parking lots and streets and stuff. There was a time where your car, especially in high school, was a third place.
Your car was my third place.
Yeah, my car was like definitely a third place.
Your
but like,
car was the third place.
But like other cars were third places too. And Jordan's car in this situation is the third place. And Angela has a whole experience in this third place. Okay, talk us through it.
Okay, so she comes out to the car. And at this point, Jordan thinks that Brian's house is her house. Because there's this whole scene. You know, there's a lot of things that led up to this. So she goes, she says hi. They're barely talking. And Jordan says, get in the car. And at which point Angela's like, look, I can't get in. I can't go anywhere. And he goes, I didn't say we were going anywhere. I just said, get in. She folds immediately, as I think many of us would, and gets in the car. And they are just sitting. I don't even want to say talking. And he eventually just kisses her. There's no lead up. And she pushes him away. And she's like, yo, back up. We didn't.
You have to work up to that.
Yeah, she tells him we have to work up to that. And he does it again. And she goes, I haven't even said 8 sentences to you. Which, like, good for her. Good for her. And a follow-up good for her, where he was like, how old are you? Okay, Mr. Held Back Twice Junior. And she's like, I'm 15. He goes, you act younger. And she again, like, this is where all her fantasies are. Like, you are not my fantasy at this point. Because she was like, bold of you to say who I am and how old I act and what I act like, because you don't even fucking know me. So who are you to judge me for anything? And he gets put in his place. Now, like, it leads up, like, his flannel's touching her. They're sitting next to each other. There's awkward silence. And she's like, shit, now is the moment I want him to kiss me. And he leans over just to open the door. And she's just like, fuck.
She's like, I could have killed him.
Real. Real.
So real. So real. So real. And also, the, like, hyper fixation on, like, his sleeve was touching part of my elbow. Like, I don't know.
She's like, I remember this. She's like, I don't even think he knows what's happening. I don't even think he knows his forearm is touching my forearm with his flannel shirt.
Yeah. But, like, those are such big feelings. Like, oh my gosh. But he says here, he's like, you know, today's just been like one long thing that makes no sense. Because the theme of episode 2 is like pressure, right? Everybody's under like all of this pressure. And the mouse is under pressure. That's why Rayanne is like, what is the point of all of this? You're measuring pressure. Like, why? And he's like, for extra credit. He has no reason. It's just bullshit.
Honestly, like, you know, Brian's a straight A student. I know it in my heart. I haven't seen his report card yet. I know it. And I get Brian's stress of doing the extra credit project, because that extra credit is that extra cushion that you get. Like, even if I do fuck up, there was this opportunity, because, you know, you had those teachers who are like, well, I offered extra credit earlier in the school year and you didn't take it. And now you want it. No, just always take the extra credit. I'm sorry. I'm still like neurotic about that. We're working on it. We're working on it.
And I just love Brian. I just love Brian so much. Like, he's on rollerblades. But Brian comes out a little bit later and Jordan comes back. Like, bless Jordan. Bless these gorgeous boys. Like,
with the fake ID.
He's like, make sure she gets that. And Brian's like,
I love this part.
Shouldn't she prove?
She needs to be 21, right? He's like, yeah, why?
It's like, well, according to this, she was born yesterday. He's like, just make sure she gets that, okay? He's like, what are you doing here? He's like, I live here. Like,
yeah, he's like, you mean Angela doesn't live here? He's like, no. He's like, is she even French?
It's like, what? It's just too good. And he, like, drives off. Brian's like, what the hell? I love, though, I mean, we're talking about friendships. Like, it is established early on that Brian and Angela hung out all the time as kids. She says, like, his house still smelled the same. It was still laid out the same. Like, it was comforting, but also, like, annoying, just like Brian.
I have a question. I don't know if I want the answer. You probably aren't going to tell me, because we hate this trope, but I'm very curious if they end up together.
They do not.
They don't. Okay.
They do not.
I feel like if they were, you would have been like, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, they do not. And it okay. is.
But I also like platonic opposite sex it tropes
is not,
too.
It is not platonic.
Oh. Well, I guess, no, it was never platonic, because Brian's always liked Angela.
Yeah, and it stays that way. And it is difficult.
Just difficult. Well, you only get one fucking season.
Yes.
Shame on you, Hollywood.
Yes, but we love a pining blonde Man, we love that. We do. Oh, yes, Draco. We love a pining blonde. Okay, yes, yes. Blonde. Thank you. Thank man.
You. I want Aaron Warner.
There you go. There you go. See, there's two. Now, Graham and Patty are having this blowout fight in their bedroom after dancing. She's like, why did you think I want to dance with you? I showed up with my haircut and you said, like, it shows off your ears more. You know, why are we so bad at dancing? Because we've known each other so long. And then Patty, like, breaks her Cinderella statue, which was, like, a whole thing because, like, her dad gave it to her when she was a little girl. And it's and she had worn her hair like that the whole time. So now it's, like, she's breaking this past version of herself. You know, it's all very symbolic. But then they have, like, what we are assuming to be a very passionate sex. Good for them, I guess, but fuck you, Graham.
Well, and then she's obviously thinking, like, really deep about it because she's like, we've been together so long. Why aren't we good at sex? And he's like, it's because we've been together so long. And she's like, you know, after they have sex, and she's very much like, I guess they're reminiscing from when they were together or when they were younger and, like, the times that they grew up is that formal steps weren't involved because they were, you know, doing ballroom dancing. And I guess it was more like a going with the rhythm kind of thing. I don't know. But there's nothing wrong with that either. I think she was just trying to, I think maybe it's something deeper of, like, we're always trying to compare ourselves to something.
This end scene with Graham and Angela heating up the spaghetti, this, like, dad bonding scene. Like, do you like anybody? Like, it's okay to like people, but, like, boys your age. And just, like, dad, like, ah.
But then what? She's like, my age what?
But what? But what? And I think that just, like, kind of goes to their relationship, too. Like, you just see, like, the way he is with her and with Danielle a little, like, to a lesser extent, is just so different from how he is with, like, Patty. And it's, like, it's difficult because in these first two episodes, he is a good father, but he is just, like, so shit everywhere else. And it is hard because I do empathize with Angela when she's like, you know, when my dad heats something up, because it is implied that her dad is a very good cook. Like,
yeah, they mention it in the first episode, too. Like, he was going to be, like, this professional renowned chef. And then, like, life happened. So he's not this huge professional chef anymore. But he's still very passionate in the kitchen. So, like, you just sometimes that meanders into other ways.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is where Angela says, like, you know, we don't go on, like, dates. Like, it's different. It's like bunches of people. Oh, and they're. And they're both, like, looking at each other and, like, smiling and, like, kind of like.
Do you remember when.
Having this conversation? Yes, I do.
I was going to say, like, yeah, because I remember it's like, oh, or even the opposite of, like, oh, when you said you were dating somebody, you didn't say you were dating. You would say, like, oh, we're going out with each other. Mm-hmm. And I remember both parents would be like, you're not going out anywhere. It is a school night. And you're just like, no, that's just, like, what you say that, like, when you're, like, and even then, I think they rolled their eyes when I said I had a boyfriend because they're like, you're not going anywhere. We're not taking you anywhere. I guess in just theory, y'all are a couple at school. In hindsight, that's why they were so dismissive of me, like, dating, because they were just like, what are you actually doing?
And also, she's not wrong, because I remember this. It was like bunches of people. It was like a group of you go to the movies, a group of you go to the mall, a group of you go somewhere.
There was not a lot of one-on-one.
No, there wasn't. There was not a lot of one-on-one until you got a little bit older, right? Like, and then it got a little bit more serious. But, like, these conversations are just, like, so crazy. And then, so Angela's mom comes down. She, like, shows her hair, like, whatever. And this is where... she's like, you know, come to bed. It's late. Graham's like, I'll clean up. And this is when he gets on the house phone, Jess, and he calls up the girl and he's like, there's so many reasons. Like, I just can't do it. Like, whatever. And then he turns around and Angela's like, yo, hello. But Angela has her own shit because she's like, I left my fake ID on the counter. He's distracted.
I was going to say, because when she picks that up, I go, I rewatched that scene twice because I go, when he's pacing back and forth with the phone, does he see it right there on the counter next to the refrigerator, stressed for her.
stress for her. Yeah, but he's distracted. He's got his own shit. And that is how she plays him a couple times.
Since the first episode when she wanted to go to the party.
With the, like, the distraction, with the bonding, like, hey, you know, hey, you know, hey, to do things. And it works here, too. Because he's just like, you are going to have his voice goes up an octave. He's like, you are going to have a hard time getting up tomorrow, young lady. And she's like,
That's where I thought, I was like, wait, did he like find it? That's why I go, did he find the card? Because he also strike me as the person, as the dad who would have seen that it was trying to be a fake and she was born yesterday. And he would have been like, I don't think this is going to work, but here you go. And just kept walking. I feel like your dad would have done that.
He would have, but I had no need for a fake. Now, that's the end of episode 2. Jess, I can tell you're passionate about this. How do we feel as a whole just after these first 2 episodes, knowing there are 17 more to go?
I mean, how am I going? I wanted to binge it. I wanted to binge it. And the only reason I didn't is so we can stay confined to the first 2 episodes. I just go back to saying, like, they don't make them like they used to. And I mean, think about it. 19 episodes for a pilot. And that's a short series. And I knew that, or like episodes for a season used to be like 22, 23. And then somebody I saw on socials pointed out that the first season of The OC was 27 episodes. And they equated that to like, that's 3.5 seasons of The Summer I Turned Pretty. So like, that is what, so 19 seasons is still a lot in like the day, you know, we're recording this in 2024. If anybody, you know, whatever happens with these episodes. But 19 episodes is long and it's short for what could have been. And we were robbed.
Knowing that so much is covered in these first 2 episodes, where it's like, oh my God, where could this possibly go? It could go anywhere, right? Like,
well, and the original, I want to say like the originality of it. And you were mentioning this before we started recording too, is that, and you mentioned it also in our female friendships episode, is like finding fun and finding entertainment and finding joy and in life, in the mundane. And you start seeing that in these first 2 episodes. And when, and I also, as much as like this is geared towards teens, but it's also geared towards families, just don't watch it together because you're obviously going to come away with it with very different perspectives. What is the last show that's really like that where it's not sensationalized?
Okay. These are my thoughts. This is my thought. And it's kind of an answer to what you're saying, but I'm sure people will disagree with me. That's fine. Just tell me your answer. Tell me what your answer is. Let's see if it's better. I think that Euphoria is very comparable to this show. Okay, we have talked about time capsules before, a time and a place, right? A time capsule of a time and a place, and like you go there for comfort, that's what it is. Well, this is a time capsule of the early 90s. You can't say it's not. There's no phones, the cars are cars, the flannel is flanneling, and like, hot damn. Euphoria, and it is friendships and experiences and high school and boys in the mundane, nothing going on. With the potential through Rayanne of some wildness on the horizon. Okay. Euphoria, tell me it's different. Tell me it's different, right? Like the parents, like Rue's mom's got her own thing going on. Nate's dad has his own fucking thing going on. Okay. And Rue has her own thing going on. We have the friendship with Jules. We have Maddie and all of her friends growing up. You
can
say Cassie
and her sister. Yeah,
Cassie and her sister. Now, Laura Marie on ACAFE, Euphoria is sensationalized. Well, you know, if you're boring, just say that. Because I don't think, okay, to an extent. Okay, Rue gets a little wild. But, especially that first season, I don't think that's wild. I don't think that's crazy. I think that is a time capsule, a time and a place.
A time and a place that's still relatable because both of those shows, I feel like will age, like, I mean, I can say, can't say like they will age well. My so-called life has so far from what I've seen, like take all the tech out of it. The core themes, the core things that are happening, even when we were in high school and I didn't watch this in high school, that's all I'm watching it now. And I'm like, oh, that shit definitely did happen in high school. Those relationships definitely, those dynamics definitely did happen in high school. Same thing with Euphoria. I don't even talk about it at work so much anymore because they're like, oh my gosh, it just seems so over the top and over the dramatic. High school is not like that. And I'm like, psh, we went to very different high schools because high school was very much like that. And going to the house just to chill out and chill with parents who were approving of all of the activities because at least it was being contained. You know, it's so interesting. But again, you're going to watch Euphoria years from now, and it's going to be the same concepts. It's going to be the same themes. It's going to be the same foundations of like relationships and humanity. And that's what these shows are at its core. They're, none of them are sensationalized because like the things that, like, even the confrontations, even the arguments, like that shit is real.
Yeah, that shit is real. And it's, and it sounds real. The dialogue sounds real. You've had those fights. You can say them word for word. Like the things that happen in Euphoria, why, the reason that I'm saying Euphoria is Euphoria was the first show where I was like, oh, they, people actually do talk like this. They actually talk like this. Because if you pay attention to like other scripted shows, they don't leave in like, that's not on script. Like isn't on script. Like, you know, I don't know. Just like we're talking. That shit isn't on script. They have like words. Those filler words are not written on script. If they're in something, it's like added, right? So my so-called life is a ton of like we're putting our hair between behind our ears. We're saying like about everything. Euphoria is too. It's not Dawson's Creek. No one talks like that. But like when you find the dialogue that sounds like real life, it is very recognizable. And then you have counterexamples like the OC, like people don't talk like that. The Dawson's Creek, people don't talk like that. In a teen family show setting. There. That's what I have to say.
With all that being said, feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're at Acafe Podcast. We're also both on TikTok, Acafe Laura and Acafe Jessica. Feel free to let us know what you thought of this episode. If you want us to continue doing episodes on My So-Called Life, I want to binge it. Maybe I will just binge it and then we'll revisit however we decide, if that's what y'all want. But thanks for taking the time. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.